Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Two down. Cubs lead by a run. Tying run at first. Martinez at the plate. Bryant guards the line at third. Here we go. Montgomery's pitch. A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins.
That extremely recognizable voice that you heard was the one and only Pat Hughes, I think the voice of summer for all of us here in Chicago, and our play-by-play guy here on 670 The Score. How's it going?
Fine, Julie, Maggie, nice to be with you guys. The convention is another rousing success. The enthusiasm, the passion of Cub fans is prevalent once again. It's just a great experience every year to come to the Cubs convention.
Yeah, it really is, Pat. And, you know, I kind of look at this. I've always looked at the Cubs convention as once we get there, the bulk of winter is behind us. It's only a month till spring training. So at what point do you start really preparing in earnest for the next year? Or at this point, have you been doing it for so long that it's just an easy breezy and you don't have to spend as much time?
Well, no, I think it's really a year-round job. Because the offseason is full of free agencies and trades and players being released and acquired. So there's a lot of changing of personnel, and I try to keep up on that 12 months a year. But I think the intense work obviously begins right before you start doing the broadcast, and then that just continues daily all the way through October and maybe even deep into October.
So something I've always wanted to ask you, there are certain names that when I hear you say them, I'm like, oh, it's summer. Eugenio Suarez is one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too.
Is there a player out there whose name you just love to say?
I like to say A. Eugenio Suarez. Yeah. I do. I like to say Wilson Contreras. I like to say Javier Baez, Albert Almora Jr. I like to say all those names. So, some of the names are just absolutely fun to say.
Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah, Eugenio Suarez is a great one. I love hearing that every year. It's one of my favorites.
For some reason, when I hear Eugenio, it makes no sense. I think of Sylvester Stallone as Rocky. Rocky Balboa. Eugenio. I don't know why. That's just me.
Well, you know, I know that you are so meticulous in your craft, and one of the things that you are really so great with all those pronunciations, and I remember seeing, you know, we all got those great, your scorecard for the last game of the World Series as gifts at 670 The Score, and one of the things that people saw was like, oh, he spelled Hayward wrong, oh, he spelled this guy's names wrong, but they don't realize people who work in broadcasting write things out phonetically, because sometimes your mouth gets going faster than your brain.
That's right, and Julie, what I do, for example, I put a defensive chart on my scorecard. I'll put the Cubs lineup, and then right above the Cubs lineup, I'll have the Cardinals or the Pirates defense. So if I put the exact spelling, as I quickly see that somebody hits a ball into right center field, say Bryant slices one into right center, if I look up and it's not phonetically correct, my mind might not work quickly enough to correct it. So I want it to be exactly what I'm going to say. Jason Hayward is H-A-Y. I know he doesn't spell it that way, but as I look at his name on my defensive chart, immediately, Hayward makes the play. I don't have to think about it that it's, you know, H-E-Y.
Right.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we were talking to Kyle Schwarber earlier and asking him about recovery from the season. I mean, and that's important for your instrument, too, for your voice. Is there anything you do specifically to take care of your voice?
Well, a lot of common sense stuff. I've actually had some issues with my vocal cords in the last 5 years. I have a condition known as dysplasia, and it's a precancerous growth on your vocal cords, and it has to be removed surgically. So I've actually had four surgeries, and you two are both broadcasters. You can imagine how nervous you would be about going in for a surgery when they cut on your vocal cords.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is
sure.
your livelihood. That's right. the way you make your living. So I have a great doctor, Dr. Aaron Friedman, and he has performed four surgeries on my vocal cords. He meticulously takes away all of the precancerous growth, and it's one of those diseases that it's very rare. It affects about 10,000 people in the world at any given time. The great Roger Daltrey, the singer for The Who, had it. There have been other singers and broadcasters, but it's very rare, and it's also one of those things that there's no real pattern. You don't know if it'll come back. It does many times. Sometimes it won't come back for a year or two, and then it'll come back. So I have to constantly keep monitoring that to answer your question about what do I do for my voice.
Yeah.
Wow, I had no idea you sound as, you know, sound the same, Pat Hughes, as you always have to me. And I think, you know, one of the things I make sure that I hear every single year is our very first broadcast on The Score, the very first regular game of the season. When I hear you say for the first time, Chicago Cubs are on the air, I think officially for me, whether that's April or whatever, that is officially when summer starts.
I like to say that at the Cubs convention. I said it last night for the opening ceremonies. Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. It's something that I think people like to hear. I know I like to say it. And it's just always an exciting thing for me. And I'm very proud of this. I've done over 6,000 big league games. This is going to be my 38th.
Wow.
I'm not asking for any applause. I'm just saying that after all those games, I still love baseball and love broadcasting so much that I'm still excited to say Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. It's game one of a three-game series. Cubs and Cardinals, here are the starting pitchers. Or whatever it is I'm going to say. I still have that excitement, and I hope I never lose it. I think if I do lose it, I'll have to quit.
He makes it sound so easy. It's not as easy as he's making it sound.
I don't think it's easy for me. I can't speak for other people. There may be other broadcasters who do what I do in any sport that consider it easy. Not easy for me, and it never will be. But I don't want it to be easy. I want to work hard at it. I want it to be as good as it can possibly be. I'm not saying that it is good, but I want it to be my best effort every single day.
Is there anything you do after the season is over to just kind of put baseball past you for a little bit?
Well, what I do, Maggie, is I've been married to Trish now for 32, 33 years, coming up on 33. And she's such a great gal, and she knows that after I've traveled like a lunatic from coast to coast for 6 months, that I don't like to travel. I like to get home. My idea of an exciting night is to have dinner at home with my wife and maybe watch a movie later on and just relax and take it kind of easy. I don't go a lot of places. I don't do a lot of things, because I'm exhausted at the end of a baseball season.
Yeah.
I've had to be somewhere every single day, virtually, for the last 7 months, starting on March 1st. When you look at a calendar, look at a baseball schedule, here's something. You will do a weekend game, say, on March 5th. You will not get a Saturday and Sunday off again until probably October, or if the Cubs go deep into the playoffs, November. That's not one weekend off for all of those spring and summer months. Not many people can say they have that kind of a job. Not complaining, just saying when it's over, you like to kind of stay home and chill.
Yeah, that's for sure. We are talking with Pat Hughes, a Cubs play-by-play guy here on 670 The Score. For my money, the best in baseball, don't you guys think? We've got the best play-by-play guy in baseball. I don't think there's any question about that. Pat, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've seen a lot of off seasons come and go. Sometimes we have huge signing that we're really excited, like Yu Darvish or someone else coming to town that we're all excited to see. And then sometimes off seasons are a little bit quieter, like this one. What are you most looking forward to this year?
I think we have a good team. We still have a very good team. With all the things that went wrong a year ago, we still came very close to making a playoff spot. We were not eliminated until the final week of the season, and that series at Wrigley, I'm trying to forget about it. I'm sure I will someday, but that four-game series with the Cardinals, the Cubs were in every single game. They had a chance to win all four. They lost the lead in the ninth inning twice in the four-game series, ended up being swept I believe all four games were by one loss. That was in the midst of a 9-game losing streak. So, I mean, we were very close. The Cardinals know we were close. The Brewers know we were close. It's not like we were an easy team to beat at any time last year. I think we're going to be a contender. I think if certain guys have career years, and I think there's a good likelihood that we will have, because we have some guys in their prime right now. Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, Anthony Rizzo is still in his prime. Wilson Contreras is getting into his prime. These guys are going to have the best years of their career, quite likely, this year or next or the year after. And that's not just one or two guys. I mentioned five guys in that category. But, you know, thinking about the offseason, Julie, so many times the things that people think about and talk about and write about and broadcast about in January and March and April has nothing to do with the way the baseball season will turn out in August and September when you get into the heat of the pennant race. By then, you will have had the trading deadline come and go, and always players are moving teams in late July at the trading deadline. You'll have rookies come along or young players that'll play much better and play a much bigger role than you anticipated. You'll have older guys that you thought were going to be good, but they've started to decline, and they're not quite the same ball player that they once were. You'll have injuries. Every team is going to have injuries. Nobody talks about that in January because you have no idea who's going to be injured. But they always play a major role, in fact, sometimes a critical role in a baseball season. So I don't get too excited one way or another in the offseason, whether you know the team is busy or not so busy, because I know that the way a season plays out is always unpredictable. It's always exciting. To me, it's always interesting. And we have the nucleus of a very good Cubs team.
So, obviously, the biggest change for the Cubs this season is going to be their change in manager. So, David Ross is going from being both on the air and also being a former player and now coaching the guys that he used to play with. What do you think is going to be the toughest part of that transition for him?
I think just the day-to-day managing a big league ball game. He has probably, as a ball player, imagined what it would be like to be a manager. In fact, many times a catcher is kind of like a manager on the field. He can see the whole defense. He's calling every single pitch with the pitcher. He's trying to get the batter out. So his head is in every single pitch. So in a sense, a catcher has already been a guy that does a lot of the jobs that the manager does on a full-time basis. But I think that David was a great player. He was smart. He has great people skills. He's a guy that likes to have fun, but he likes to get down and have, you know, get down to serious business as well. So I think he's got a perfect blend. He's got a lot of ingredients, I think, that could make him a great manager. I really do.
So you've seen a lot of managers come and go during the time that you've been doing this. I guess the question is, when you've got a team that is not in a rebuild mode, and a lot of times that's when we see a new manager come in, but a team that is hopefully going to be competitive this year, how does bringing a new manager in sort of, I don't want to say upset the apple cart, but sort of change, and what are the challenges for those guys? And is it even the case here because they do know David Ross so well?
They do, and Julie, going back to a comment I made a minute ago, so many things are unpredictable. You don't know exactly what you've got. You think you know what you've got. In spring training, you look at your team, you think, we're going to be strong here, we're going to be strong there, we might struggle in this area. And sometimes you're right, but sometimes it's completely the opposite of what you think. Sometimes you go into a season thinking, our bullpen looks solid. That turns out to be the weakest part of your team. Or you'll say, our starting pitching looks a little shaky. It'll turn out to be the strongest part of your team. It's really crazy the way that works. So I think that many times a manager is at the mercy of the baseball gods regarding injuries and slumps and guys just not playing as well as they used to. At the same time, a manager sometimes can be blessed with teams staying completely healthy, with guys having career years, with your team getting some breaks. I'm a firm believer in baseball that luck plays a role. It's not the most important thing, but some teams are just luckier than others. Some seasons are luckier than others. And you'd have to be in the business for a long time like I have to kind of be able to say that. But I firmly believe that some seasons, things just seem to go your way. And you think, you know what? We're getting some lucky breaks here in May and June. This might be a pretty good year for our team. Or, on the other hand, you might lose some heartbreakers on bad bounces or balls lost in the sun or crazy plays or umpires' calls, whatever. And then you might think, this may not be our year. So every season is kind of different, but I believe that luck always plays at least a small role.
So obviously the big story this week in baseball is everything that's happened with the Astros and how, you know, people have been fired and been suspended and everything because of their role in some cheating.
Being cheatsy.
Being very cheatsy. Is there, do you look at the Astros differently now, or do you also look at what happened with players like Yu Darvish and Clayton Kershaw differently?
You know what, Maggie? I think everyone's going to look at the Astros a little differently now. I really do. And they're going to look probably at certain individuals, the guys who have lost their jobs. I think they're going to be looked at a little differently now. I don't like cheating. I don't like that. It's a very competitive business. And trying to get an edge has always been a part of sports. It always will be. But there's a line between trying to steal signs with the naked eye, trying to watch the third base coach as he's flashing signs to the batter or the runner. If you're smart enough on the other bench to steal his signs, that's one thing, and to me that's perfectly acceptable, and it's within the realm of sportsmanship. But when you start going to video and getting video pictures of a catcher flashing the signs and then relaying that information to the batter at the plate, that's just cheating, and that's wrong. And to me, those are different things. The Babe Ruth movie, I'm sure a lot of you have seen that, the old William Bendix story. Babe was a pitcher. Remember how he tipped off his curveball? He stuck out his tongue. He stuck out his tongue when he threw a curveball. And the other batters picked up on it, and they said, well, we know how to hit Babe Ruth. Every time he's going to throw a curve, he sticks out his tongue. Now, that's not the same thing as what the Astros and other teams have been doing. That's kind of old-fashioned. But, you know, trying to gain an edge and trying to, you know, steal signs has always been part of the game. But what's going on lately with this video technology cheating is way over the top. And it's wrong, and I think it should stop. And I think if these teams were guilty and these individuals were guilty, they deserve to be punished. I really do.
So how are you going to talk about the Astros when the Cubs face them this year?
Actually,
I don't know that we do.
If we do, it would be an interleague series, and we played them last year. I don't think we do play them this season. But you know what? I wouldn't dwell on it. I would just, I think when a thing happens in the off season, it gets perhaps more coverage because there's no ball games going on. In the season, there's a ball game every single day for 30 different teams, so there's a lot of news going on every day, and you don't really have a chance to delve into topics like this. So I personally, I think by the time we play them next, it'll be ancient history, and I probably won't say much about it at all.
You do have a very interesting perch that you can really see the game very well when you're... the first time I went to the press box, I was like, oh, I get it. Now I understand why, you know, this is the perfect place to sit. But when you're watching the games and seeing game after game and the patterns that emerge, have you ever seen anything from another team, you don't have to name names, that you've thought was a little suspect?
You know what? Sometimes you look at the numbers. You really do. You see, for example, home and road batting averages or home and road home runs. And you see that a guy has 25 home runs and 21 of those have been at home. You think, boy, his wife must be a good cook. You know, he's eating very well at home. But there might be something more to it. So that's a good question. And yes, I do. So certain things are suspicious. Let's put it that way. Or a team might be winning a lot more games at home than they are on the road. Now, home teams have always played better than visiting teams in big league baseball, but sometimes the numbers are so staggering that there might be something fishy going on.
Right.
So the answer is yes.
Okay.
So, Pat, I know there's a play-by-play booth, I think across the street at the Lowe's Hotel, that fans can jump in. I did this back, one of the very first Cubs conventions, I got in the booth with Randy Minkoff, and I was a kid, and I was shocked at how hard it was to do play-by-play, because you're so used to watching it on TV as a kid, and it seemed so easy. If people are going to go over there and give it a shot, what advice do you have for them?
I would say practice a little bit before. Be yourself. Whatever you see, put it into words, and here's what I would tell people. If they're just starting play-by-play, and I get a lot of calls and letters, and I have demo tapes, and I have people now sending the electronic demos to me, and I listen to them, and I report back to them, men and women, all different sports. And I always tell them, if you want to be a play-by-play announcer, there's only so much you can learn in a classroom. There's only so much you can learn listening to a professor or listening to another broadcaster. You have to get out and start practicing play-by-play. Take a recording device out to the local high school basketball gym and start doing play-by-play. Or take your recorder out to the American Legion baseball field, sit way down the left line in territory, start doing play-by-play. The first time you do it, going to seem very awkward, the second time a little less awkward, and so on and so on. It might take you 100 games before you feel like, I kind of know what I'm doing. And it might take you 1,000 games before you think, I'm ready to make a living doing this. So don't think you're going to be able to be the greatest announcer who ever lived in the first week of your career. You won't be, okay? Get out and practice. And go to college, try to get on the college radio station, listen to other broadcasters. You can get ideas, both what to do and what not to do. But the only way you really learn is by practicing.
So baseball, I think one of the characteristics that's both good and bad is that it can be slow. And there can be, when you're broadcasting, there can be some moments where you're not necessarily talking about the game.
I've noticed.
Once or twice. Do you and Coom ever, kind of write down some of the subjects you want to hit, or is that kind of organic?
We like it to be organic and spontaneous, yes, because that's more fun, I think. I will maybe sometimes say to Ron, I might read something about what happened in a game last night in Seattle, where a guy had a weird injury or something funny happened or there was a weird triple play, and I might say, Coombs, don't answer now, but I'm going to ask you about that triple play in Seattle last night. And I always say don't answer now because I don't want him to discuss it with me right now. I want his response to be fresh on the air. With Ron Santo, this used to be funny. We would talk about a play during lunch, 15 minutes before we'd go on the air. We would talk about a play that happened in the Cubs game last night. There would be a play in the eighth inning at second base. And we'd talk about it over lunch, and then we'd go on the air, and I thought, well, this was a good discussion Ron and I had. We should wait till we go on the air. So I'd say, Ronnie, let's go ahead and talk about that play that happened in the eighth inning last night. Oh, no, we already discussed that at lunchtime.
That's why we don't talk about anything before we go on the air.
Yeah, we'll start to and then be like, wait, hold on,
stop.
Hold it for the air.
I feel like saying, well, Ron, we did discuss it, but nobody was listening. Now we've got a million people listening in the audience. This is when I want you to talk about it. So we try to keep things spontaneous.
Yeah.
Will we ever get an oral history of Ronnie's toupee catching on fire at Shea Stadium?
These things happen.
I actually pulled my car over listening to that. I was laughing so hard.
These things do happen. And it could have happened to anybody. It could have. You've probably heard the story. Would you like to hear it again?
Yes. Always.
Okay.
Always.
If you force me, I will tell it. It was a cold night in April. Probably about 2003, and we had this old-fashioned electric heater, the kind that glowed a bright orange, right over our heads in the old visiting radio box at Shea Stadium. So during the national anthem, we stand. Ron Santo gets a little too close to the heater. Halfway through the anthem, I smell something burning. I hear something sizzling, like bacon on a stove. Zzz. I look over at Ron Santo. His hairpiece is on fire. There is smoke billowing out the top of his head, a little blue flame shooting up. I thought, I got to do something. I grabbed a glass of water, splashed it on his head. That's what any good partner would have done. Now, Ron was a handsome man and somewhat vain about his appearance. His first thought was, how does it look? How does it look? I almost laughed right in his face because it looked like Tiger Woods had taken a pitching wedge and whacked one right off the top of his noggin. There was a divot in the top of Ron's head. We got a lot of mileage on that story, and I'm still getting some mileage on it. But Ronnie and I always thought that it was hilarious that the Mets' starting pitcher that night was Al Leiter.
Rather appropriate.
And if I remember correctly, he said something afterwards like, that was my number two about the hairpiece. And he said maybe three now with the singe marks. Like, he wasn't even sure if he was going to move it down in the rotation.
Yeah, he numbered his hairpieces. Ronnie was a very unusual man, very unusual, but fun. And he was funnier just by being himself. He wasn't trying to be funny. He used to drive a Tahoe. He got these free automobiles, Lucky Ron. And he drove it to the ballpark in Milwaukee, and we stayed in a hotel. And it was in a parking garage, so you're on those inclines. And for some reason, I had to borrow his vehicle to go out to the store or to the restaurant. So I parked it, and I put the parking brake on. Okay? It's a parking brake because of the incline. And then I gave him the keys. Okay, Ron, see you tomorrow. And Ron apparently had never used a parking brake in his life. He didn't know how to turn it off. He drives from the hotel to Miller Park with the parking brake on. He couldn't go more than 20 miles an hour. Normally it would take about 15 minutes to get there. It took him an hour and a half to get to the park. He's furious at me. Of course, he's blaming me for his foolishness. Who put the parking brake on? Well, I did, Ron, because it was on an incline. It took me forever to get here. And he said he was driving literally 20, 25 miles an hour on the expressway.
Well, sure.
And then he had to pull off onto side streets. He saw Cub fans walking, and he pulled over. I didn't pull over, but he was going slow enough. He could just yell out, hey, I'm going to the park. Do you need a ride? And some of them said, no, we're in a hurry. We'll walk. That's how slow he was going. But he was furious at me for putting the parking brake on.
For saving his transmission.
Well, Pat, it's always an absolute pleasure to visit with you and to hear some of your great stories. And I know I'm speaking for everyone here when we say that, you know, the first time we hear Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air is the best moment of maybe the entire year for us, definitely for the summer. And I can't wait for things to get going this year.
Very good, Julie. Nice to be with you and with
big
you,
round.
Maggie.
Thank you. Yeah, we did too. A big round of applause for Pat Hughes. Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.